You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker. And before we jump into this show with Jesse Greger from Next Mile Meals, I just wanted to remind everybody that you can save 20% off of the University of Elk Hunting by Elk 101 by using the code ROOKIES. Now's the time to get started. Now's the time to dig in and start planning out these hunts and start thinking about what you're going to do in 2019 for whatever season you're going to be hunting in whatever state, wherever it's going to be. The draws are starting to close. Arizona's closed, New Mexico's closed, starting to see a lot of these states close, and people are starting to get their tags, and it's time to start getting it planned. The best way to get yourself prepared is to get a subscription at University of Elk Hunting. It has every resource that you need, from preparing for an elk hunt, which is what we're all doing right now, right? We're all starting to think about it, how we're going to do it, what we're going to do, all the way to packing your elk out of the woods. Get yourself ready. Save 20%, use the code ROOKIES. Now, something else I wanted to talk about before we get this show going, there's a couple more things. They're both pretty quick. First thing is I wanted to do a fitness update. So back in January, I was starting a fitness plan, and I had Matt Hartsky on, and I had Kyle Camp on from I Hunt Fit, and Kyle is from Valley to Peak Nutrition. And I had them on, and Matt built me an incredible fitness plan, and Kyle is just killing it with the nutrition plan. And I wanted to give you guys an update. It's been a few months now, and I wanted to let you know where I'm at. Right now, I'm down as far as my weight when I stand on the scale. I'm down 17 pounds from where I was when I started January 1st, which is pretty significant considering the weight gain that I've made as far as what I can lift. So I've certain that there's increased muscle mass. There's a lot of increased, just muscle weight on my body. So there's got to be a lot more loss of that excess weight. I'm down 17 pounds and I've lost just a little over 4 inches off my waist. I'm feeling good, running quite a bit. I'm getting a little over 20 miles a week right now, feeling a lot stronger in the gym. Everything that I lift has increased as far as the amount of weight and repetitions. So things are going up. Everything's going good. Just this morning, as a matter of fact, I did a really fun run. My wife and I went out and did it's called the Sweaty Yeti. And it was just a trail run, 5K trail run here in New Braunfels, Texas. And we had a blast. We've both been running a lot more. So we were both in pretty good shape now. And we had no problems. We were on the trail. We're cruising up and down the inclines and down the declines and kind of jumping over rocks and bouncing through the trails and passing people. And we're both feeling real good. So it's kind of a nice feeling, especially as we start to plan for this elk season. It's a good feeling to get out there and hit these aren't mountains down here, but they're hills. And it felt good to hit them and get up and down them, no problem. So anyway, thanks again to Kyle at Valley to Peak Nutrition and to Matt over at iHunt Fit. Thanks, guys, for squaring me away and getting me where I need to be. We've got up until September to make this all happen. So my goal is 200 pounds and a couple more inches off my waist. So I don't think we're going to have too much of an issue. I'll tell you right now up front, one of the things that was slowing me down was actually tracking my meals. Kyle kept telling me to do that, and he wanted me to jump on MyFitnessPal and really log my meals. And I was thinking I was doing a good enough job. I wasn't really taking it too seriously. And when I started doing that, I really started to see the difference. It decreased the amount of food I was eating. It decreased my portion size. And I really saw a difference. So that is one thing that if you're out there and you're working out and you're not seeing results, or you've kind of hit a plateau, measure those meals, measure them and log them, so that you can look back on them later. So the last thing I wanted to mention before we jump into this show was I recently got a review on iTunes, and it was a 4 out of 5 stars. And I wanted to talk about that a little bit. I appreciate the input that I got from, I don't even know how to say the name, but it's spelled LASALLLLLLLE. However you say that, I appreciate the input. So basically what they said was I've had some poor audio quality in the past, and on a positive note, they say it's a really good podcast and we have good topics and good guests and, you know, that the episodes are good, but we've had some audio quality issues in the past. And I totally agree with that. There's been a few shows where I've tried to use Skype to record those shows, and either on my end or the far end, the guest end, we've had some issues. Or there's been a couple where we try to use cell phones to make that connection, and trying to use speakerphone or something, and it just doesn't work right. And it does result in poor quality. So I want to say I'm trying to fix that. So I bought some new equipment. I've upgraded some equipment. And the last show that I did with Robbie Denning was the first show that I did with my new equipment. This will be the second one. I'm also working on building a podcast studio so that I'll have a little bit better audio quality and a little bit better place to sit and just be more comfortable when I'm on these calls with people and recording them. So I appreciate that input. 4 out of 5 stars. I'll take a hit. And I apologize to listeners for that. I'm working on it. I will do my best to do better in the future. So on today's Backcountry Rookies podcast, we have Jesse Greger. And this is going to be a really cool show. And I know there's going to be a lot of information that some people really want to hear about. And Jesse owns a food company that's called Next Mile Meals, and she produces food for backcountry or backpacking, and that food is created around the keto diet, so there's a lot less carbs than normal. And I know I posed the question on the Backcountry Rookies Nation the other day of who eats keto when they're backcountry hunting or they're backpack hunting, and I had several people say that they do keto when they're hunting. So I wanted to bring this over as an option, certainly as a food option for people that buy their own food when they go into the backcountry and, you know, they buy those meals. So we have Jesse on here. She's going to talk all about how it all started, what's going on with Next Mile Meals now, and then what's going on in the future. And with that being said, I'm just going to let Jesse introduce herself, and then we'll jump into it, and we'll just kind of pick the Next Mile Meals apart. So, Jesse, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Jesse Greger. I am the founder and CEO of Next Mile Meals, and I live in not so sunny California. I live in San Francisco, so it's a bit foggy here. I grew up on the East Coast in rural Pennsylvania, and the sort of relevant experience that led me to talking to you today is that in 2017, I found myself at mile one of the Pacific Crest Trail, and I hiked 2,600 miles backpacking from Mexico to Canada, and I'm excited to show everyone and explain how doing that ketogenically in the backcountry is maybe the best way to do it.
Yeah, so there's definitely going to be a lot of questions from my end about it. First off, congratulations on the PCT. That's quite an accomplishment to make it through that.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. What led you to, from the East Coast, you know, to come over and hike the PCT, and what got you involved with hiking and backpacking?
Yeah, so growing up, I grew up in a camping family. We camped and we fished. And so I was always just in the backcountry at random times during my childhood. And then after college, when I ended up in California, I started just backpacking on the weekends and doing, you know, 2-3-day treks. The longest trip I had done prior to the PCT was the Wonderland Trail, which is about 9 or 10 days that goes around Mount Rainier in Washington. And I was just hooked. I loved the idea that, you know, you could never carry enough in your bag to make it through a 10-day trek. So you had to do mail drops and you had to plan ahead. And it became so much more of a logistic puzzle than simply packing your bag, hiking out, camping overnight, and hiking back in. And so I started looking at long trails. And the PCT was sort of just always a one day, this sounds really cool. And I'll look at this maybe when I've retired. And, you know, who has the time and the energy and the capacity to take on a 5-month journey like this? And then the stars aligned and my job sort of took a break and I left on, you know, great terms with them. And I had this opportunity to just hit the trail. And my partner, Christopher, sort of was very supportive of the whole thing. He had just started a new job, so he couldn't go with me. But now I had a resupply partner at home and everything else just aligned. And I just started hiking.
So you went from a 9 or a 10 miler to how many? 2,600? Is that right?
2,600 miles. Yeah. So the Wonderland Trail is 100 miles around Mount Rainier.
Oh, it's 100 miles. Next... Okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No worries. And then, yeah, then 2,650 is roughly the length of the PCT. It changes every year because of fires and reroutes, but it's always plus or minus 10 or 15 miles from that.
What an awesome accomplishment. So, so that I know in our world that we have, and that's the backcountry hunting world, and you know, that's throwing your pack on and loading it up sometimes with 10 days worth of stuff and going out and chasing animals around. There's a lot of similarities, but there's also a lot of differences. So the idea today is to kind of talk about the meals and the food and how the keto diet worked for you while you were on the PCT. And if that translated, how does that translate over to what we do? The first thing I really kind of want to ask about is, what is the keto diet and how did you become involved with it? Just so that way we have a baseline, we kind of know what it is and what it's about.
Of course, good. Start with the beginnings. So the keto diet, keto is ketogenic, meaning that your body normally gets its energy from the conversion of glucose. When you eat bread and starches and sugars, even fruits, your body converts that into glucose and burns that as fuel. When you deprive your body of carbs or just try to stay low carb, doesn't have to be zero carb, but just lowish carb, under 20 grams a day, your body doesn't have enough glucose to make that its primary fuel. And so it switches sources and it goes, okay, there's not enough sugar anymore. I'm going to burn fat. And it starts burning fat off, and the product of that is ketones. So you start using ketones as fuel. The metaphor and the comparison I give is, you have a diesel engine versus a regular gasoline engine, and they operate on different fuels and they operate slightly differently than each other. Maybe the regular gasoline engine starts up really fast and burns really fast and like shuts down really fast. Maybe the diesel engine is a little more efficient and a little slower burning, but provides maybe more sustained fuel. The body is the same way. So again, I'm not a doctor. This is just based off of a significant amount of research available online. I've chatted with doctors and those in the medical community. And the underlying understanding of keto and ketosis, the state of being in a ketogenic diet, is that when your body is operating on ketones as fuel as its main source, the energy you get is a little more steady, it's a little stronger, and it's not as highs and lows. On keto, you're not going to have a 3 p.m. crash. There's no metabolic reason for you to kind of burn through all of your fast, quick-burning energy and then sort of feel hangry or, you know, starved for sugar or something. Your body is leveled out, and it just becomes a steady state of energy. So that's great in the what we call the front country, you know, at home when you have access to a fridge, because the foods that are required to stay in ketosis are meats and veggies and fats and cheeses and dairy. Those are a bit challenging to have in the backcountry. But keto makes a fantastic backcountry diet because you're looking for the same things. Whether you're hiking or hunting, you're looking for a sustained, lightweight energy. And sugar had always been the go-to. Shove a Pop-Tart in your face, you know, maybe a Snickers bar, or, you know, freeze-dried meals that have pasta and rice, dehydrated potatoes. Those are the diets that look the same whether you're hiking and hunting. You're trying to, you know, maximize your calories per ounce. Fatty foods have the best calories per ounce, olive oil, macadamia nuts, but they don't freeze-dry or rehydrate really well. And so there's always been this disconnect between what works well in the front country, eating keto, and what is efficient in the back country, lightweight and easy to rehydrate. And so crossing that divide was sort of my challenge as I took on the PCT, but, you know, completed it. And a bunch of keto hikers out there and keto hunters and campers who thought that their hobbies were off limits because of their keto diet can now do both. And it's great to watch.
So were you on the keto diet before the PCT?
Yes. And so whether or not you've been on it for years or whether or not you're thinking about starting it, I always recommend go through your adaptation phase. There's a 30-day window where your body is figuring out how to operate on this new fuel source. You might feel a little cranky or like if you've lost, if you haven't had caffeine for a while, it's that same sort of withdrawal feeling of like your body is used to a specific source of energy or fuel, and it needs to figure out how to operate differently. So give it 30 days, fully adapt over, if not longer, before taking on a backcountry trek. So for me, I had been keto, I say keto-ish, lazy keto for those in the know, where I wasn't really tracking my exact macros, the macros being fats, proteins, and carbs, down to a science, but I had been keto-ish since high school. My dad did Atkins growing up on and off and then South Beach for a little while. So I was familiar with the basics of the diet, and then went to college and post-college, being mindful of the carbs that I was eating, eating primarily, you know, paleo or keto. But then when I was, I guess it was about 3 years ago, 2016, I sat down with my doctor and I was like, I feel terrible. I have no energy. I'm exhausted all the time. My skin is breaking out, which, you know, as a 30-year-old, I was not okay with. And then I was gaining weight and I felt like trash. And she was like, look at your diet. Maybe it's your metabolism. Let's try to figure out what's going on. And so just trial and error and being familiar with keto, I tried to give it a strict 30 days. And I was like, you know what? I already eat keto-ish. Let me try actually eating ketogenically. And so for 30 days, I tracked everything that I ate. And within a week or two, I felt night and day. I woke up with the sun. I had energy again. Everything sort of like clouds parted, angels sang, everything went swimmingly. And I was like, oh, that's right. This works for me. And it doesn't always work for everybody, but it's something that for me, I had been in ketosis or in a ketogenic state for about a year before I tried the hike.
Okay. My next question then is what kind of food bags did you prep when you hit the PCT? Was it stuffed with those gummy bears and those, you know, what you hear about that you need when you hike it, or did you start at keto?
So most people, the hard part is quitting their job and hitting the trail. That was the easy part for me. I really thought that I would have an easier time food planning than I did. And so I said, I'm doing it. I'm going to go walk from Mexico to Canada because that's the thing normal people do. Now what? And I sort of stood back and I was like, oh no, there is no food available for me, because the typical through hiker diet is, you know, if you're burning 7,000-8,000 calories a day by hiking 25 to 30 miles each day for 5 months straight, you're burning too many calories that you can't fit in your bag. And so the typical through hiker diet, it looks like a 5-year-old designed it. It's like if you handed a kid their ideal menu and they were like, I just want candy bars and sugar and honey buns and, you know, pasta every night, and this sounds great. None of that I could eat. And so I thought it was going to be, I was going to have to throw in the towel before I even began that, not because I couldn't do it ketogenically, but that the food wasn't available for me. So it wasn't a physical limitation. It was a logistics issue. And so by the time I had hit the PCT, there was never a doubt that I wanted to try it traditionally. I didn't want to stain my hike on gummy bears and sugar. I wanted to try it with whole foods. And so it just became this process of what sources and what freeze drying process and what dehydrating process for weeks before the trail to make sure that I had the meals ready to go when I hit that first mile one.
Yeah. I've heard of that trash diet or the gas station diet. I've heard it called several different things. And, I don't know how people sustain that long on honey buns and Pop Tarts. I just don't know if I could do it.
I feel like it's only somewhat sustainable on trail when you're burning so many calories per day. And for a lot of hikers, it works for them, and that's great. And I always, there's a phrase on trail, hike your own hike. And so the idea is find what works for you and stick to it. And don't try to convince other people that you have the right way. And so while keto worked amazingly for me and I was able to power up hills, you know, more sustainably than other people, some people like the garage gas station diet, and that works for them. So find what works for you, and you know, don't necessarily think that you have the one best way.
And that's what we're doing here today too. We're not telling people to be keto and go backcountry hunt. We're just covering options that people have. And I definitely want to talk about next mile meals, which we're going to get into right now. Right now is a good time, I think, to transition. So you're out there, you're hiking on the trail. Talk about that kind of that transition from what you started taking with you into the development of next mile meals.
Yeah. So I hit the trail with 6 recipes in my bag. I had tried to figure out what could I reasonably make for myself, what freeze drying and dehydrating meals could I have made for myself that I wouldn't get sick of night after night for 5 months. And so I started with 6 meals, assuming, you know, a different one each night. And if I liked really one, I could repeat it. I had this whole scientific thought process to it. And about a month in, which was the perfect time to sort of look at those who thought I couldn't do it, I was told all the time, you won't make it 100 miles. There's no way you're going to be able to sustain a through hike ketogenically. And so once I got past the 30-day mark, well past the, you know, the 100 miles mark, I realized that I was still enjoying all of my meals. And now the naysayers had sort of backed off and it became less of, you won't be able to do it. And now it's, oh, how are you doing this? Like, the food you're eating each night looks better than my dehydrated mashed potatoes with olive oil that I'm consuming because it's cheap and it's, you know, calorically dense. And so I started just looking at my meals like, whoa, I made this. I didn't buy it anywhere. And then people on trail, other hikers were like, can I pay you money for your meals? Because that looks really good. And I'm sick of eating the stuff that's in my bag. And of course, I didn't have any extras. And so I kind of paused and I thought, I wonder if, you know, if we've just assumed that hiker diets should be bad because that's the only thing available. And I wonder if we're actually craving better food for the backcountry. So I, you know, the entire time I'm writing home to my partner, Christopher, who's also resupplying me, I'm like, okay, well, this recipe needs more curry spice and less salt in this one. And oh my gosh, this one's great. Don't touch it. And so we had these really, you know, refined recipes. We like to say they were trail tested over, you know, 2,600 miles. And about halfway through in Mount Shasta, I like posted a website and I was in this little trail library in Shasta, California. And I had just literally come off the trail. I'd hitchhiked into town. I smelled like a dying corpse. And the poor librarian who gave me the access to the internet that day just turned up her nose at me and was really unhappy I was there. But I sat at that computer and I launched the website. And nextmilemeals.com, you know, kind of existed. And suddenly I was just asking the question, is there anybody else out there looking for better trail food, looking for better trail nutrition, better energy? Are there other ketogenic athletes out there who thought that the backcountry was off limits to you? Like, if you're interested, let me know. And here's this form and here's this email sign up and I'll post updates as I go. And then I just walked back off into the woods and forgot about it for a while. And then a couple weeks, months later, when I had internet access again, I like checked it and there was thousands of people who were clamoring for more information, ketogenic, non-ketogenic, just looking to not eat the terrible conventional items that were available in your nearest gear fitter. And so when I finally hit the end of the trail and had proved to everyone that it was not only possible, but maybe better than the existing way, I got home and together Christopher and I launched Next Mile Meals. And we now offer those same 6 recipes that I eat on trail every day and night. We now offer them on our website. And we can bundle them together. And we've had new through hikers this year who ate our meals the entire way, both on the AT and the PCT. We had some people take our meals down to New Zealand and do a stage race. Hunters, as the season picked up through the fall and winter, the photos coming in from all of those hunts have just been amazing, especially since I'm not a hunter myself. I grew up mostly fishing. But the entry into that world and seeing how the audiences of backcountry hunting uses our meals has just been an amazing process and learning so much about that. So yeah, now there's nextmilemeals.com and we're happy to answer any questions that folks have if they want to shoot us an email and we're thrilled to be helping out the community.
Well, you'll probably be getting some more hunting pictures pretty soon because I know I'm taking...
Oh, please do.
Yeah, I'm going to take some with me. I'm going to Oregon here in a couple months and I'm definitely going to take some with me. Meatball marinara is a fact. That one's definitely going.
That's one of our best sellers. One of our favorites too.
Jesse had sent me meatball marinara to try it, and it was a pretty darn good meal compared to some of the other ones that you eat that are just piled with salt and you know they put the extra flavor in there and spices and everything just to kind of kill that freeze dried flavor. This thing tasted like it was just straight out of the kitchen. I thought it was fantastic. So I really want to try that or another one of those. I'm going to get some beef tacos and some the roast beef, and I'm going to take all 3 of those to Oregon with me. So,
solid choices. Yeah, try the roast beef on a wrap like a tortilla.
yeah, that was the plan. So anyway, so I want to kind of know about what the other you touched on it a little bit, like what the other hikers were saying. Like, oh man, that looks so much better than what I'm eating. So were those. Like, did people start buying your meals from you, and did you start seeing other people eating your meals while you were on the trail, or did it develop that quickly?
So while we were on trail, I mean, when you go into a food business, and this has been sort of the fun roller coaster of the whole process, food production is incredibly sanctioned and regulated, and you have to have inspections. And so we weren't able to launch the food portion of the business while we were on trail, but we kind of gathered interest, and I, you know, passed out, you know, suggestions and tips and tricks. So like, for instance, you know, people were looking over and they couldn't figure out why my meal smelled so good. And I explained the spice mix that I used and how to pack olive oil in your bag so it doesn't leak everywhere. Pro tip, if you take those little Johnson's & Johnson's pink baby travel containers of baby oil you find in CVS and you clean them out really well, those containers make amazing backpacking oil containers and they won't leak and they're meant for oil. So just little tips and tricks on like how to make backcountry food better and more nutritious. And so that's what we did on trail is I just sort of passed that information along to my trail family and other hikers that I passed by. And then once we finished the trail and I came home, that's when I kind of got into the weeds on FDA and USDA and what does it take to launch a food company? So that's when we actually started, you know, selling online. We did a bunch of pre-sales and people were just clamoring for it. And so in July of 2018 was when we finally, you know, we shipped out our first meal, and it was a big deal for us. You know, we were a small family-run organization. Right, it started off just the two of us, and so to have this internet community, like, because we still have that mentality of providing for the community. We want to make sure that the information is there. Like, yeah, there's a site, and you can buy the meals pre-made, but we also list like what you can buy in a grocery store to, like, you know, find either ketogenic or at least nutritionally dense items. So On Trail was more about just being a resource and providing information to the community of hikers and backcountry, you know, adventurers. And now that we have the site itself, now we're, you know, FDA and state health inspected and everything's on the up and up.
I think it's really, really cool because it's so trail tested, right? Like, you started that trail and you had those meals and you said, okay, this one needs more salt. This one needs more whatever, pick your spice or, you know, and by the time you got done, you had 5 months to perfect them and every night eating them. So.
Oh yeah. And you get sick after a while. There's some, you know, when I started, I had Spam in my bag and I thought this is going to be great. And it's going to be a yummy, salty treat every day in addition to my meals. And Spam was amazing for the first, like, oh man, I'm going to say through the first state, through the first 2-3 months of California. And then I hit the Oregon border and I told Christopher, never send me Spam ever again. I am so over this.
Never say that.
And my meals,
never turn your nose up at Spam. I love that stuff.
Try eating it every day. It definitely wears on you. But my meals, I never had that feeling. I never got sick of them. And I was constantly tweaking them and adjusting them. And yeah, trail tested is the best way to explain it is a lot of companies, you know, they try to talk the talk, but they never walk the walk, so to speak. I mean, I kind of joke that I hiked the hike. I took my meals out with me and I never intended to start a company. I intended to just help me get to the end of the trail. And so I think our story resonates with more people than companies that jump on a bandwagon or a fad just to make a quick buck.
Let's talk about the hike a little bit because I'm kind of curious about your energy levels and, you know, just if you ever bonked or if you had any trouble, if you ever fell out of, maybe this is the wrong term because I don't know that much about keto, but if you ever fell out of ketosis on the trail and how that affected you.
Sure. So there's two different ways you can kind of fall out of ketosis. Like on a trail, it's like intentionally and accidentally. There was no accidental ketosis failure. I planned my meals very carefully. I knew how many miles per day and how many carbs per day my body could tolerate and stay in ketosis. And so generally we would write down these spreadsheets and they would calculate, okay, well, this meal was 6 net carbs and then, you know, add a Spam in there and that's 1 net carb. And maybe I had a Crystal Light to add some difference to my water each day. And so all of that added up and it ended up being roughly around 30 net carbs per day, which is slightly more than I would eat in the front country. But you're also exercising so much more that you have a little bit more wiggle room. So never at any point did I accidentally pull out of ketosis because I was monitoring what I was eating so well. But there was a couple meals along trail that I decided, you know, I'm not going to deprive myself of if something adds to the experience. And it's not just a craving and it's not just, you know, oh, it's there in front of me and I'm hungry, so I'm going to eat it. If a meal was a part of the experience, I allowed myself to eat it. So an example of this was we have a pancake challenge in Sayed Valley in Northern California, where the trail goes through this incredibly small town. And the little cafe there is infamous for its challenge, which is 5 five massive hubcap size pancakes. And every year hikers try to eat all five of them. If you eat all five, it's a free meal. Very, very few. I think maybe one or two tops have ever completed it or completed each year. So when I got there, I was like, cool, I'm going to feel like trash after this, but I'm going to try it because this is literally part of the trail. Like, how many times do you get to experience this? And so I sat down and my trail family watched on as I consumed, I think, nearly three pancakes, you know, crushing every other person in the diner that day. And felt horrible and it tasted amazing. Pancakes are my weakness. But then I immediately was like, cool, I experienced that. And now I continue on with my hike ketogenically. And so immediately packed up my bag and I think it was like a 2,000 or 3,000 foot elevation climb immediately afterwards. And so definitely was regretting some of my decisions. But yeah, there was maybe three or four very, very specific, well-planned choices on trail to eat non-ketogenically. But again, if it's part of the experience, if you're not eating just because it tastes good, feels good, but it's actually, you know, highlighting that trip for you, then go out of ketosis. You will pay for it on the flip side of trying to get back in, but it was worth it in the end.
And about how long did it take you to get back to where you needed to be after the pancakes?
Generally, because you're hiking so much and you're hiking so far, it happens within a couple hours. Within a couple hours, you're kind of back to where you were before, or like get a good night's sleep and just make sure you're eating healthy the next day. The faster you burn through the glucose that you've ingested, the faster your body will switch back over. But your body is lazy. It wants to find the easiest source of energy, even if that energy isn't efficient. And so, you know, you could still have fat, you know, consumed or on your body that it could use for energy. But at the moment you give it sugar, it's like, oh, okay, cool. We don't have to work for this anymore. This is great. And it quickly burns, you know, the kindling rather than the large log, so to speak. And so it's sort of a like burn through what's in your system, get that horrible meal you just ate, you know, exercise, get it going again. And then your body will finally grudgingly go, okay, well, I guess the easy energy is gone, and it'll switch back over. It's not a swap that is, you know, recommended necessarily to do a lot. It's kind of exhausting to have your body constantly going in and out of ketosis. But if you do it occasionally and you're well planned about it, it's not going to destroy anything.
Okay. So you're talking about how you can get back into ketosis so quickly once you're done. I'm kind of curious on what your, like, the amounts of food that you were taking in, sort of what your calorie intake was daily. And you said about 30 carbs per day?
30 net carbs, yeah.
Okay, so what's the difference there?
Yeah, so you look at a nutrition label and it's going to have all your macros for you. Again, that's fat, proteins, and carbohydrates. Those are your three macros, so to speak. Net carbs is the essentially what your body can actually digest of those carbohydrates. So fiber, for instance, can pass through your body, which is why it's a great cleanser. But fiber is technically on a nutrition label listed under carbohydrates. But since it's not digestible, we don't really count those. And so if you have, say, an avocado might have five carbohydrates, but maybe three of those carbs are fiber. And so you subtract one from the other. And so when you subtract those, you end up with two net carbs per avocado. And I might be wrong about my math, but it's somewhere close to that. And so when you're looking at sort of what you eat in a given day, you calculate your fat, you calculate your protein, and you calculate your net carbs. Things that pass through your body without being absorbed or digested that way don't count. So 30 net carbs.
Okay.
Is the sort of like the key to staying in ketosis.
Okay. Now, and then about how many calories were you trying to eat per day?
Ooh, I'm going to say that my diet started off right around 2000. And then you end up with what's called hiker hunger. Your body after the first week or so is like, oh, okay, we're walking a lot. This is new. we have to up our metabolism a bit to make sure that we have enough energy to sustain this. And so whether you're eating keto or not, hiker hunger is it's a real thing. And, you end up just ravenous all the time. Your body views any moment that you stop as a chance to shove food in your face. And it lasts for a while after you get home too. Your body hasn't realized that you've stopped moving, which is why a lot of thru hikers lose a ton of weight on trail and then they gain it all back within a month because your body is still in this high rev, high fuel burning state.
Sure.
So started off around 2000 calories and then hiker hunger kicked in. And in order to maintain for myself an adequate level of energy, I ended up consuming between 4,000 and 5,000 calories per day. Some of the fitter guys in my trail family and that I hiked alongside were eating up to 6,000 or 7,000 calories per day. Men's bodies tend to not perform as well as women's bodies. I kind of joke that guys look incredibly emaciated at the end of trail and women look like Greek goddesses. Our bodies just consume energy differently. We hold on to fat differently. And there's going to be a difference in genders and on how we hike. So the conventional hikers, the traditional hikers, will maybe eat 5,000 or 6,000 calories per day. Most keto hikers that I've talked to, they just need less and fewer calories. It's something that I don't really have a scientific explanation for. And it's just something that we reach a point of satiety where we're just not hungry anymore. Our body says, you've had enough to sustain me and there's no reason to consume more than is necessary. So it's just one of the perks of keto.
Perfect. And then how many miles were you guys doing per day? Average. I know it changes day to day, but what was about the average?
The most I ever did in a single day was 37 or 38. There's one stretch of trail where you can do, and people try to push to do a 50 miler up in Oregon. It's just incredibly flat, incredibly straight, and you just kind of go for gold. But the average was, I'm going to say, about 25. I hiked in a high record snow year. And so the Sierras were just trudging through, sun cups, and it was just never ending snow fields. And so I only averaged about 10 miles a day through that section and then 35 through the desert. So 25 per day is about where you're at. And I found that keto gave me the energy to keep going a bit further each day. You had asked earlier sort of what energy benefits did I get from keto, and the differences between the miles per day or the energy per day of a conventional hiker versus maybe a keto hiker is conventional hikers are going to, you'll see them putting a candy bar into their bodies right before a big hike up, or, stopping frequently during the day to constantly, they kept hitting a wall and then they'd need food and then they hit a wall and then they would need food. Keto was more sustained. I only found myself, I would have some breakfast and I would snack throughout the day while I was moving. And then I would stop for dinner and there wasn't much stoppage otherwise. Other hikers were faster than me. That's for sure. When you have quick burning energy, you can burst up a hill super fast, but then I would find them sitting in a group at the top, eating a Snickers bar again. And I'd go, okay, hi guys, nice to see you again. I would keep going. And so early on, I found myself unable to find a group to stay with long-term because they'd want to stop early each night, just exhausted. And I would still have 2 or 3 more hours of energy in me. I'd be like, okay, well, I think I'm going to keep going. And so a hike that started off very communal and social for me, I ended up hiking alone for a couple hundred miles, just bouncing around different groups because my pace was so much more sustained and I had so much more energy than other people.
That's interesting. Okay. So we kind of talked, I was really curious about that, just sort of the nutritional intake that you had, but I want to go back to Next Mile Meals a little bit. That was kind of a tangent there and I apologize. I want to talk about the ingredients that go into the foods, right? Into each meal. So I know when I ate that meatball marinara, after I rehydrated it, the one thing that surprised me was the cheese that was in there. It was almost like it was just put in there like fresh cheese right before rehydration. So what kind of ingredients are you using and how are you making them stay that fresh tasting?
Yeah. So one of the benefits about supporting a small business like Next Mile or any of the other small backpacking food companies is that a lot of us still make the meals by hand. The large corporations, and don't be fooled, a lot of the smaller backpacking companies are actually just subsidiaries of the large corporations. They've just decided to rebrand themselves as small businesses. But they use economies of scale and they're producing meals thousands and thousands of units at a time. But in order to do that, and we looked into that as a possible, as we grew, a possible option for production. In order to do that, you have these massive industrial mixers. And when you're dealing with freeze-dried ingredients, what that does is it pulverizes them. And so all of the ingredients just look like a beige mash of sort of just stuff. And there's nothing ever really recognizable in most of the conventional backpacking meals. Our meals are made by hand. We go to a commercial kitchen and we put out thousands of cups and bags and we individually pour all of our ingredients into each portion. We visually inspect them. We make sure that all the peppers are brightly colored and that nothing's gone bad and that everything looks like it's the vegetable or the meat or the dairy that it's supposed to. So for things like cheese, that's one of the things that makes us awesome is that when you put a spoon into the meatball marinara or the beef tacos, you're going to come out with globs of cheese because it's real cheese. It's sliced and shredded, and then it's freeze-dried, and then it's put in, and it's not pulverized because it was lovingly hand-scooped into a container. And we tried the powdered cheese because it was cheaper, and we're constantly trying to find ways to bring costs down, but it ended up not being as good. And so if you're looking for inexpensive, cheap, mass-produced, commercially available food, stick with what you find at your nearest REI, and it may not be super recognizable. But if you want real ingredients, and our ingredient list shows this, most of our ingredient list is only four or five things. It's usually a really great protein like ground beef, some spices like rosemary, and then shredded cheese and vegetables. And there's not much else. The thing that makes ketogenic meals harder to produce than, say, you know, your pasta or your rice is that fatty proteins especially don't freeze dry well. They go rancid pretty fast, which is why we think that we're sort of the first offering that gives you high protein, high fat meals, because it's more expensive to produce. Pasta only costs 5 cents per serving, but ground beef might cost $2 or $3 per serving. So if you're trying to produce millions and millions of units each year, you know, good healthy foods aren't economical for companies. We're not worried about that. We're okay being small, and we're okay just sort of serving a little niche of backcountry folk that are just looking for better food. So I'm really glad that you dug in and you found real cheese, because that's what it is. It's real cheese.
Oh, it was awesome.
There's nothing fake about it.
It was awesome. That day I cooked, I don't remember, my wife was sitting there with me eating something, and I was like, you got to try this. This is incredible. So I was really impressed with it. I was super happy. So can't wait to try more. That, what's the shelf life on something like that? Does it change? I would assume it does, right? You're using real ingredients, fresh ingredients. Does it have a shorter shelf life on your foods? Okay.
Each ingredient individually is shelf rated up to, you know, the typical 25 to 30 year bomb shelter proof lifespan. We generally recommend that at least a year for sure. Again, we've only self-tested our meals 1 year in. We're still brand new. And so we're constantly, you know, socking them away and then testing them a year or two later to figure out, okay, what went bad? Even if it didn't go bad, does it just not taste as fresh? And so we generally give a recommendation of try to eat it within a year. It'll keep much longer than that. We've tried recipes 2-3 years out and they've been fine. But make sure to test if there's an included packet like mayo or ranch, those will go bad first. And so just make sure you test those before you dump them on your meal. And that's pretty much true of even if you just went to a restaurant and got some mayo packets, just test them before you ruin an entire meal, because those things go surprisingly bad fast. So, just test it. But yeah, a year you should be fine, especially if it's kept in like a closet, something cool and something dark. But there's O2 absorbers in each bag. They're preserved the same way, you know, massive cans of beef are preserved, and they're pretty good in an emergency too.
Okay. I'm planning on getting my stuff for the bear hunt here, you know, just about a month out, so that I know they're going to be good quality and really fresh. And then I'll probably do the same thing for elk season. So what's the demand like right now? Are you guys running out of anything, or are you able to stay ahead of orders?
So when we first started, we thought that this would be this cute little side project for us, just a passion project, and we would serve the needs of maybe a couple hundred folk during the year of just, you know, the small niche community. So we only planned for a couple hundred customers. And then over the summer, the response was unbelievable. We officially launched on July 4th weekend, and we just got slammed. And so we ran out frequently last summer. And so we kept taking orders, but we made very clear that, like, hey, we're out of this individual meal right now. You can substitute it with a different one, or you can wait a week. And we just tried to be really transparent with our customers as to where we were at. We scrambled to make sure we could meet them all. We're in a much different place now. We now know that there's a market for it. We know that there's a demand for it, and that people, you know, if you just communicate with them, they're fine. So we haven't run out since. I think most orders ship within 1 to 2 business days and are delivered in another business day. You know, we're not Amazon. We don't have 2-day deliveries, but we have 3- and 4-day deliveries. So those are pretty good. And then we're going to see what this upcoming season looks like. And so, if you're thinking about a trip and you think that you can get it done within a week, I try maybe ordering a week or two or three out just in case. They won't go bad. You'll have them on hand. And then if there's some massive rush of customers, you'll be ready to go. We thought that we would hit Labor Day and then we could take a break after the craziness of the summer. We figured kids are back in school. Everyone is sort of not backpacking anymore. And we forgot about the hunters. Again, we're not hunters ourselves. And so it's a community that we weren't aware of. And everyone from elk season was just ready and raring to go. And so we got hit with another wave. And I was like, oh, okay, let me learn more about backcountry hunting. And so I sort of called up a couple of our customers and just like asked them questions. Like, what are the similarities between our hobbies? What can we do that can help support your community? And, you know, even if we're not hunters ourselves, we support getting people into the backcountry more. And so, you know, how do our missions align and how can we help that? So that's where we're at now is we're riding our first year of sales and figuring out where the peaks and the valleys are so that we know and can make sure we don't run out and we're able to fulfill orders as they come in still.
I think that's awesome. Small business. Hopefully you guys, I mean, everybody wants to make money ultimately, right? But hopefully you guys keep it that way where it's user-friendly, customer-friendly type of stuff. Perfect segue, I guess. You kind of talked about what's to come for this year and what you're planning for. So let's talk about some of the changes and what's the future of Next Mile Meals.
Yeah, so there's three big changes coming up this year. One is just sort of scaling, as you mentioned, the idea of keeping things affordable while, you know, we can still survive as a company. And one of the reasons why our product is only available on our website is for that reason. If we were to wholesale out to retailers, you know, the price of our meals would go up astronomically. And so we want to make sure our meals are affordable for everybody. So we're trying to find that balance this year between being more accessible to folks who maybe don't have internet access or don't enjoy shopping online or want to hold the bag in their hands before they make a purchase. And so we're trying to find some channels this year to reach new people and maybe reach our Canadian customers and our Australian customers. And so shipping meats overseas is a bureaucratic nightmare, but we're working on it. So that's one change is we're looking for new channels. Two is we're going to launch some breakfast. I'm more of a drink my coffee and pack up the tent and hit the trail kind of person. But a lot of people, especially when camping, want a good hearty, you know, high protein, high fat breakfast. And so we've got two or three coming out in the next couple months. And if you pay attention to our Instagram or our website and our email list, we'll probably be sending out some promos for people to try them and give us feedback. Again, we're small enough that customer feedback is implementable. We take that very seriously. Somebody tells us something is too salty, then if we hear it enough, we change the recipe. We're not so big that we can't move this ship. So that's going to be a fun one coming up. We're really excited about that. And the last one is our packaging is now way more backpacker friendly. Before we needed to just launch, and the easiest and inexpensive way to do that was to use Dock bags. So our bags are actually packed in what it was originally marketed for, coffee bags, because guess what coffee and backpacking food has in common is you need a very airtight, watertight seal. And so the packaging is perfect for that. But now we're at a point where we can start making packaging that is more ideal for the backcountry. Our bags now are 9 inches tall. So now we're going to make new bags that are a bit shorter so that spoons can fit in them better without getting your hand dirty. Our bags are wider, so they sit a little flatter on rocky surfaces. And the materials are lighter so that the ounces, you know, don't add up in your backpack. All those little micro adjustments are because that's how we eat in the backcountry. Those are the things that we wish that other backpacking food meals did. And now we have the power to do it ourselves. So we got all those changes coming up, hopefully in the next 6 months or so.
Right before elk season.
Yay!
Yeah, good. Well, I think it sounds like you guys are thinking about it, and that I think that's cool. You didn't just come up with a product and say, okay, people like it, people want to buy it, leave it as is. You guys are making changes and kind of doing what customers want. And so that's cool. That's very cool. Can you spill the beans on what breakfast flavors you're going to have? Or do you have it nailed down yet?
We're still working on them, but we're testing out a few different versions right now. One that we think is a winner is a sunrise sausage scramble with a bunch of cheese, which I know you love, and some sausage and eggs. And so we're trying to riff on different versions of it and figure out how to get veggies and eggs out the door to people. So we're still figuring out the others, but we're pretty sure that one's going to hit the shelves soon.
Yeah, I'm kind of one of those like you where I just coffee and a breakfast bar and I'm ready to go, but sometimes it's kind of nice, you know, when you got a nice rainy or snowy kind of morning and you want a hot breakfast, it's kind of nice to have.
Absolutely. It's a perfect cabin meal.
One more thing that I think, I mean, I have a whole list of things I wanted to talk about, but we're coming up on an hour. And I think one of the most important things that I had left was on your website. You mentioned this earlier, but on your website, you have a what do you eat on a ketogenic backpacking trip? And you guys have kind of laid out what you can do, or when you go to the grocery store, sort of how you can buy food and what food you can buy. And I wanted to reference that for a little while and talk about some of the more important and some of your favorite backpacking store-bought items that you had. Can we talk about that for a little while?
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, to your listeners and subscribers, like, the website is meant to be a resource. And so there's a list on there. It literally says it's the best keto backpacking food. And whether you're keto or not, that list is useful, because the same math that goes into keto food is the same math that goes into an efficient food pack for your hike or your hunt, which is, you know, what is nutritionally dense? What's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck by the ounce? And so some of those foods are just backpacking staples that you've probably had before. Salami and sausage are usually pretty great if they're encased properly and they're shelf stable. Hard cheeses keep really well in the backcountry. Soft cheeses, not so much. Would not recommend that. But like a block of cheddar or a block of Dubliner cut up and put on a tortilla, a low carb tortilla for me. But a regular tortilla is totally fine. With packets of mayo, things to add, you know, some calories back into your diet. We're big fans of nut butter, so like almond butter and macadamia nut butter. Again, super calorically dense and tastes amazing in the backcountry.
So
avocados. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry I interrupted, but I was just checking these things out the other day and I've been seeing them a lot more. Are you familiar with the F-bomb things?
Yes.
So those
F-bombs are amazing.
Yeah, okay, because I was curious. I saw that they have, you know, almond butter or almond oil, or I don't remember what all they have, but it's a lot of oils. And then I saw that they even have packets of coconut oil. How does the coconut oil, is that pretty good on the trail or when you're, you know?
Yeah,
when you're
beat up? So the owners of Fat is Smart Fuel, like the F-bomb makers, it's Ross and Kara. They're fantastic. And they've actually been great mentors to us as we've launched our own food business. And so if you're looking to support another, you know, good group of people, the F-bomb folk are just amazing. And so we take their products on trail with us frequently. The coconut oil mixes really well with our curry. You end up with a coconut chicken curry.
Oh.
The avocado oil mixes really well with the beef tacos. And then they have another olive oil that goes well with the marinara sauce. And so, yeah, find ways to take oils on trail with you. Theirs are really great in single serve packets. You can also just put them into a little jar if you want to and just throw them in your bag. But adding oils to your meals is a great way to get calories on trail.
Sorry I interrupted there, but I was looking at on the website. You have a picture kind of laid out of, it looks like about 2 days worth of snacks and food and stuff. And I was looking at the Justin's almond butter, and then that got me thinking about the F-bombs. So the picture that you have here doesn't look too far off from like what I carried with me when I was in, you know, doing my hunts and stuff, minus I had some bagel thins and tortillas and stuff, but cheese sounds incredible, actually. I didn't take cheese. I was a little concerned about it, but I think, so a hard cheese, how many days does a hard cheese last if you throw it in your pack?
I was eating enough of it that I think mine lasted, I could get by with 4 days. Again, in the backcountry, hygiene isn't the nearest thing to you. So it's sort of a, like, if you squint and it looks still good, you should be eating it. And if not, you should not be eating it.
Yeah.
There's no hard and fast rule for it. But I generally felt no problems and was able to eat hard cheeses on trail 4 days out. And so most of the stretches, that was totally fine. And the longer stretches, like through the Sierra, were 10 days, but they were in snow. And so I had my full refrigerator every night that I got to put my food bag in to keep the critters out from.
Yeah,
that list that's available on our site, I don't need to go through every individual thing, but if you like cheese, the freeze-dried cheese is also great. So there's a couple companies that make chips made out of cheese, which sounds just decadent, but it's great when you're looking for crunch. But yeah, we're not affiliated with any of the products other than our own that's on that site. All of those are genuine recommendations that we pack into our bags, and we got no benefit from posting about there. So it's a true, honest review of what goes into our pack to fuel our own adventures.
Yeah, cool. I think that's an excellent resource. And like you said, the whole website is meant to be a resource. even include, I was going to say not to include the shopping portion, but actually that's the biggest resource you have, I guess, is to buy the food and be able to have that with you. But there's a lot of information on there too. That's pretty good stuff. I'm actually going to really pick through this, the what you can buy at the grocery store thing, because there's a lot of good looking stuff on there. You guys really laid it out nice. Well, with that, I had some other stuff I wanted to cover, but like I said, we're kind of pushing up on an hour here. We can briefly touch a couple of these. I wanted to cover some of the similarities, because I think a lot of times people think there's so much difference between a backcountry hunter and a through hiker. And I don't think there's that much different, except maybe you got on a pair of shorts and a tank top and a backpack, you know, different style backpack, and we're wearing a whole bunch of camouflage and a little bit heavier duty backpack. So I think there's a lot of similarities there. And I was just kind of curious, like, what'd you use for a tent? I know you guys try to stay just as lightweight as we do when we're heading back there. So, what'd you use for a tent when you were on the trail?
Right. I think I agree with you entirely that the similarities between the two hobbies is pretty profound. And again, I felt almost embarrassed that I hadn't considered backcountry hunters to be like an outdoor activity that we should be thinking about when we were trying to figure out who our audience was. And now that I've sat down and talked to folks like you and other people who do that on a regular basis, the similarities are numerous. You know, we do have different gear and different things we wear. I mean, I wore shorts and a t-shirt for most of my trek and just wore a ton of sunscreen, and you guys have, a little more camo and blending in. We're probably a little more flexible in what we can pack and in trying to maximize our bag weight. My bag on its average day weighed 12 pounds. I'm pretty sure yours weighs significantly more than that. Then of course you have to pack everything out. And, so there's definitely different strategies regarding, what are you packing and how are you packing? But the things that the communities can learn from each other, I think one thing that hunters can learn and are starting to learn from hikers is if you can shave weight on the other stuff, then when your pack is at its heaviest, you'll feel the burden a little bit less. And so while our packs are light, essentially all the time, if you can start off with a 10, 12 pound base weight, then when you add things to it as your hunt, is successful, then maybe that's an extra 10 or 15 pounds you don't have to carry on your back. So tent-wise, I use a Cuban fiber tent from Z-Pack. They use the duplex, which is generally, delicate fabric. It's really only meant to last about 2,000 miles. So one good through hike, if you take care of it, mine's still going strong. And it only weighs, I want to say about 20 ounces. So it's just over a pound, if I remember correctly. That in and of itself shaved 2 pounds off my pack when I switched from my previous freestanding tent to one that was supported by trekking poles. So that's an easy way to save, if you use trekking poles. Tent's a huge winner. Switching to a really high quality quilt was a big one for me. I'm a tosser and a turner. And so I got one that was extra wide just so that there was no air that got through when I rolled over inevitably in the middle of the night. And that shaved another 2 or 3 pounds off my base weight. Sometime soon we'll be posting a list of all the stuff that we literally pack with. And so I think that, the hunting community is not the only one who's curious about ways to shave off weight. If anyone's looking for more information, there's some really great pages out there regarding ultralight backpacking. That even if you don't, cut your toothbrush in half to save 3 grams, there's still really good learnings from that community. And I like to say I'm sort of a tiptoe in the ultralight ideas. I might cut some extra straps off my bag to shave off a couple ounces, but my toothbrush is intact. It's not getting cut in half anytime soon.
Yeah, right.
So that's, I think, fun. That there's a lot of learnings. Yeah.
Yeah, and what'd you use for a stove? I'm just curious, to boil your water and heat up.
I'm trying to think what it's called. It's I have this little small canister stove, and on top is a no name brand off of Amazon. It costs $8.
So it's just a burner, one of them little tiny screw on burners.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Just you screw it on, you click the thing, the little automatic lighter never works, and so you have to use a little torch thing. So yeah, it's super lightweight. I think it only weighs an ounce.
Yeah, okay. I was just curious. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think, unless you have anything else that you want to add, you got anything else?
This has been absolutely great. And again, as somebody, you know, who doesn't hunt herself, but is fascinated by the hobby, if you or any of your listeners have advice on how, you know, how we can better service that community, or like, what are the struggles and things that you're, that hunting hunters deal with that maybe hikers don't deal with and we haven't really thought about before, email us. We're, like I said, we're small. We respond to every single person. You'll see from Jesse or Christopher at the end of each email. It's not some massive team. So if you have suggestions, or if you think hunting is something we should be thinking more about or have suggestions for, we're all ears. And so reach out and say hi and check out the website and let us know what you think.
In fact, you say reach out and say hi. What's your email address?
It is literally hi@nextmilemeals.com.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I could, after you said that, I thought, is that the one that's got that email? So yeah, hi@nextmilemeals. You guys, well, why don't you go ahead and leave your contact info?
Instagram is probably our most active social channel. It's just @nextmilemeals. And then our website is www.nextmilemeals.com.
Were you going to do a discount code for the backcountry rookies?
Absolutely. So if any of your listeners go online and use the promo code BackcountryRookies for a limited time, we'll let you guys have 10% off anything you see in the store. We normally reserve that price for large bundles, but if you just want to try one or two meals and see if you like them, you can go ahead and use that code, BackcountryRookies, all one word.
Thank you very much. So in addition to that BackcountryRookies discount code, for 10% off, I also wanted to remind everybody that coming up in May, we're going to be doing a giveaway. And so MSR has donated a Pocket Rocket 2, a burner, just like what we just talked about that Jesse used on the trail, where you put your can on it, and then, you know, you got to have your own pot and all that stuff, and then you'll heat up your water. And to include with the MSR Pocket Rocket, Jesse's going to do a giveaway too. So
absolutely. We're thrilled to let your listeners try out some of our meals. So the winner will also receive a promo code for our site for two meals of their choice. So they get to try out a few of them, and we'll cover shipping to their door.
Awesome. I recommend the meatball marinara. It's killer. Yeah, but make your own decisions. I'm just saying that one's really good. Well, I think we covered about everything that we're going to in an hour since yeah, we just hit the hour mark. But Jesse, I really, really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we get some backcountry rookies out there eating next mile meals.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on. This has been wonderful.
Cool. I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. Thanks to Jesse for coming on. That was a lot of fun. A lot of information there too. You can add to these meals to add those necessary, or not necessary, but you know, if you want to add those macros to your meal, if you want to add pasta, you want to add a bagel, you want to add tortillas, whatever you want to add to it, you can. But they're there if you want them, and they're there in that keto-based diet plan if you want to eat them and without all of the carbs. So I think it's really cool that Jesse has built the Next Mile Meals, because it gives you that option to be able to have that keto meal or to throw those carbs in there if you really, really need them. So thanks to Jesse. And something that I wanted to make sure I put out was, in the show, Jesse mentioned that for a limited time, we were going to be doing 10% off with that discount code. That discount code is good through the month of April. So coming, you know, when May 1st hits, that discount code will go away. So make sure you use it in the month of April if you're wanting to try out those meals. Coming up next week, we've got Dylan Dowson. And Dylan is from Onyx Maps. So Dylan's going to be coming on, and we're going to talk a lot about the functions of Onyx and how you can use Onyx to plan your next hunt, as well as, you know, just navigation when you're on the ground, when you're out there in the woods and using it and downloading your maps, and really just the total package that Onyx can bring you when you're out there. So that's a really good show. Stick around for that. I think you'll really enjoy it. And as always, thank you to Dan Johnson at the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. None of this would be possible without Dan back there on the back end supporting all this stuff. So thanks, Dan. I'm out of here. I appreciate y'all listening. Come back next week. Onyx Maps.